Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
For all you Allplay fans, there's some tiny games launching at UK Games Expo that are also going to be available for pre-order at allplay.com. First, there's Slambo, a fast-paced 2-4 player hand management game where basically you're trying to force your opponent to either go above 10 or below 0 to land a Slambo, stay balanced, or get slammed. Each card pushes the balance up or down, blue cards raise it, red cards lower it, and you're basically trying to outlast the chaos and come out on top. There's also For the Emperor, which is designed by one of my close friends, Whitney Lorraine. We actually got to play this one at BGGCon. While it was the two of us playing, we were playing as ancient clans going head-to-head in a tactical 2-player duel. I got to play as elite warriors on 7 different battlegrounds, each with unique powers, trying to outwit Whitney, and I lost. It's okay. But it was fun. I wasn't able to control all the battlefields, so Whitney beat me, but it's still pretty cool that both of these games are coming in these tiny boxes and are only $9 each. So definitely check them out. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 116, Biome. Today we are joined with the creator of the game, as well as the founder of Lioness Games, Leonie Grundler. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Danielle.
I'm super excited. I feel like we've known each other now for quite some time, and I told you like a year ago, when this game comes out, I want to have you on the show, and it's been out for a while, so like it's a little delayed, but I'm happy to have you.
Oh my goodness. I cannot believe it either. When we first met at Gamma 2023, I had just started designing Biome, and I was so nervous, and you were so generous to chat with me, you know, having already designed some games, signed with publishers. So fun to see both of our journeys evolve since then. So yeah, it's great to be here.
No, super cool. I remember Underdog Games. My boss is like, this girl came up with this game that seems like it would totally fit for us. Like, Danielle, like, would you be willing to talk to her? And I was like, sure. Yeah. And it was so sweet of you to be like, oh, I'll buy you tea or something. Was like, bet. Yes, I love tea, especially at conventions. So good.
Oh, I love that. Really cool guys over there.
Yeah. And so what like got you to start trying to design a game?
Yeah, oh my goodness. I know, if you had asked me 3 or 4 years ago if I had ever designed a board game, I would say in your dreams. So it's pretty wild to be here now. It was summer of 2022, and I had been laid off from a job at a tech startup here in San Francisco. Naturally, I was playing a lot of board games that summer. I thought I would take a break from the job hunt. I was a little burnt out, needed some time to recoup. And so I was playing a ton of Wingspan, among others. And I had the idea, you know, what if there were snakes that could eat the eggs from other players? Like, that would be so fun.
Legitimately my nightmare. You're like, fun. Yeah. Me,
I always
nightmare.
Forget that you have this massive phobia of snakes.
It's okay. It's fine. At least I can say the word. Continue your story.
Yes. And I'll get back to that. We should bring this up again later, if you're okay with that. So that was kind of the birth idea for Biome. And then it wasn't until October of 2022, a couple months later, where I got sick with COVID for the first time and had a quarantine. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to make this game. I don't think I would have started designing Biome if not for a friend who had shown me, brace yourself, AI art. So maybe that's another topic for discussion later that I'd love to get your thoughts on. But, you know, he was also designing a game and he was like, Leonie, there's this really cool tool. And I had never heard of it. And yeah, so I started generating art for the game and it was so helpful. Like, it really brought my first prototype to life. So yeah, I was sick and quarantining for 10 days and I had never been so energized or focused. I was working all day from morning till night, making cards. Because I basically had been thinking about it for a while now, like, okay, it would be a nature-themed tableau builder. And I Googled, like, coolest plants and animals in the jungle, marsh, and prairie. Then I was just brainstorming what their possible actions could be. And I was making my prototype in Canva, for the most part, like, designing little cards. Then 2 weeks later, I had a prototype, and I had my first playtest. And it was a 3-plus hour game. So bless those, you know, my first playtesters. There was clearly something there. We all had a good time, even though things were pretty rough. But yeah, then I knew, okay, I really want to make this game. So that was early November 2022.
Oh, that's so cool that you actually took being sick and got motivated. Most people do not do that.
Yeah, it was really unexpected. I'll say that much.
So yeah, that's like such an interesting story of how you took not feeling so good and becoming very motivated and going on a Google dive into figuring out more and more about these cool animals and where they live. It's very interesting. I have not heard this story yet, so this is a new one, and we're past 100 episodes.
Wow. Yeah, I when I heard you say 116, I was like, one, that's a great number, and holy cow, you have been so productive and prolific, so that's super exciting.
It's all the cool people that are on the show. So you had a crazy long playtest session in the beginning and you skimmed it down, made it a game that people want to buy. But like, what is the gameplay? Like, what are people doing when they play?
So for those listening, we'll assume that many have played Wingspan, which was the original inspiration. So similarly to Wingspan, players are collecting resources to play plant and animal cards into different habitats. That's more or less where the similarities stop. So the game takes place for the season. So every round of the game is a season, and every season has simultaneous phases, a seasonal event, and then a turn-based action phase. So in the beginning, players are collecting the resources, drawing cards, playing a card. And there's also a point track. So whenever you earn points through playing cards or some of the other things that I'll talk about in a minute, you move your little point token up on the point track, and there are some instant bonuses on the point track. And there are ways to give up victory points so that you can move behind a bonus again and collect that bonus a second time. Yeah, that's like a big point. Part of the game is maximizing that point track. And then the seasonal event is also very core to the game. So for example, in the spring, for birds that have been placed next to trees and rabbits that have been placed next to plants, they will make nests and have babies. And I have tiny little wooden chicks and rabbits, which you've seen, that you put in the little straw nests. And yeah, so then you've got these cute little babies in the spring, and then in the summer, the predators come out to hunt the baby animals of the other players. I know, it kind of hurts, and then you realize, oh, I don't have enough food to feed all my babies anyway, so I'd rather an opponent's predator get them.
I'd rather feed another animal.
Exactly.
Oh, the circle of life is cruel.
It really is. So that's an other ways to get points are hunting the baby animals if you're the other players. And then after the predation phase, it's like a feeding phase where you get to spend additional resources to feed your babies. And if they grow up and fledge and leave the nest, then you earn more points. And then, yeah, after that is the action phase. And all players activate one action from a card they've played. And the one thing to note is each action can only be activated once per game. So it's not really your traditional engine builder, but I've heard others describe it as a mini engine builder, because you definitely notice that there are actions you can take which build up, you know, as you've played multiple reptiles or collected a certain resource, you can kind of specialize and then earn a lot of victory points later on in an action. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's Biome.
Yeah, I feel like it definitely has that build a tableau out and then choose when to trigger things. I could see like someone maybe thinking it's an engine builder, trying to invest in that way, and then be like, oh crap, that's not actually how this plays.
Right. Exactly. So what I try to do is I try to make all of the actions a lot stronger and then limit how often you can do them so that nothing ever feels too unbalanced or unfair. That if, you know, someone gets a really strong card, you know, no one's really frustrated, like, oh, I didn't get that really great action. So they're all the actions are pretty strong and you can only take each of them once.
How did you go about like playtesting and balancing out the game so it didn't feel like something was overpowered?
A ton of playtesting. I was really lucky that I could devote myself full time to this, which I know not everyone can. So I was doing at least 3 playtests a week over a year. So that was probably the biggest way. And then I also created a spreadsheet. So I looked on, you know, Reddit, BoardGameGeek, did my research, like, how do other game designers approach this? And assigning point values came up. And so, okay, I went through all the cards, created a massive spreadsheet, you know, made sure, are there more or less the same number of birds in each habitat? Like, how can we balance all the different cards, card types, abilities, minimum and maximum point generation for each card to make sure they were all in a similar range? So that was the major way. I am actually curious what your thoughts are on this as well. I've definitely left some of the cards to be a little stronger than others. Like if I noticed this one feels overpowered, or not quite overpowered, but this one feels really strong. I like that. You know, when you draw a card and you're like, oh, this is a really good card. And some people I've noticed are like, oh, this card is like overpowered or really, really strong. Like, what is your take? Do you like that when games have some cards that are a little stronger than others? Or do you think it's best to always keep them, you know, perfectly balanced across the board? I'd love to hear your take.
See, I'm the one who normally unbalances it mathematically.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, like with her story, I very much design based more off of like feel. Especially with an engine building game like Wingspan or Her Story, really the perception sometimes matters more than the actual math, because if you get something early on and you can't afford it, but it's really good, it's not actually useful then because you can't have it till later, making it maybe a little cheaper so you can have it, but it is a really awesome power. It's like, okay, well, at this time in this game, it's going to be like overpowered or perceived to be overpowered. But if you got it later in the game, it's like really not that great. So I personally don't think there is a way to like, I mean, yeah, you can fully balance things out, but I like having things that seem too good to be true and have a person go, oh my God, I'm so excited to play this. Like, I think those are what lead to those fun moments. And as long as no one is just like wiping the pants off of everybody at the table because of one card, I think you're fine. I think those are the ways that strategy games can be fun, because like fun is different for different genres of games. Like party games, it's laughter a lot of times, or those memorable moments where like strategy games is like, oh, this combination working together made me do this really cool move, and that's what feels good because I feel smart. So I'm pro this. I'm good with it.
Yay, I'm glad we feel similarly. And I think it's like balanced out again, as I mentioned, by the fact that you can only activate each action once. So, you know, even if it's a little stronger than another one, like, you know, no real harm done. That's cool to hear for you. I need to play Her Story. That's still on my list. Like, next time we hang out, please teach me.
We can totally do that. Yeah, I liked it because Her Story, I always joked, was like, play this and then Wingspan. So if you've already played Wingspan, which you have, since it did partially incentivize you to make Biome, you will definitely be able to play Her Story. It was more like my way of making a game that my mom could play that could maybe get her to playing Wingspan someday.
Oh, awesome. Okay, that's so great to hear.
Yeah. So you said you were playtesting on average like 3 or more times a week. Where were you finding your playtesters?
For the most part, my neighbors. My parents' neighbors are huge board gamers. Shout out to Liz and Peter, Alden and Marcus. They were so willing to playtest with me quite often. And, you know, they have a massive collection and have also traveled to different board game conventions. So they were huge. And then various other friend groups of board gamers that I have in the Bay. My dad set out, his work had a board game club. So he messaged the board game club there. And so I had 3 or 4 groups of playtesters through them. And then, yeah, local board game, like SF meetups and San Francisco meetups. And then San Francisco also has a great game creator community. It's called the Golden Gate Game Makers. They host several times a month meetups where game designers playtest each other's games and share feedback. So yeah, I would say I had at least 10 or more groups, you know, that I would rotate between, which is pretty amazing. Yeah, that I had easy access to so many playtesters.
I used to have that back when I lived in the Chicago area. I was like alternating weeks, or like this one was every week, and you just like bopped around the different ones, plus the digital testing that became bigger.
Yes, screentop.gg was like a huge unlock for me once I figured out how to do online playtests. That was great to show off Biome to some folks like in Germany. And then I eventually joined with Protospiel online and playtested the solo mode there. So that was cool.
I remember when I was playing the game, there is a part where it feels like sometimes like you get a lot of stuff. And so you're able to do a lot of things. Was that a choice that you're like, you know, I don't like when games limit you with resources. I prefer to give people more and just see how to play with the resources they have. Like, what was that design decision like for you?
That was definitely quite the journey to get to that point. So I always had some kind of trading ability. And exactly as you mentioned, I prefer it when people have options. And I think one of my favorite mechanics is being able to discard two cards to draw a new one. To be honest, I can't even remember how that came to be. I do remember earlier on in the design journey, I had different ratios for trading different cards and resources for other cards and resources. And there was like a ratio for, you know, discarding four cards in a disaster. So I have this mini expansion, the natural disasters mini expansion. And like, let's say the tsunami hits your marsh or whatever. Once per disaster, you can discard four cards to save one of your played cards. And so I had all these different ratios, like discard three of this resource to, you know, exchange, yada, yada. And so at some point I realized, okay, I think with playtester feedback, I really need to simplify this. And so eventually it just became two for one. So anytime during the game, you can exchange two of something for one of something else. And I was definitely very hesitant at first to do that because I did find it was almost too easy to exchange and get the resources you need. So I think the good solution I found was, okay, for the standard edition of the game, that's what it'll be, two for one. And then there's an expert mode where the trading becomes 3-1 for resources, but the default is 2-for-1. And I, overall, the feedback I've gotten from players is they really do like, you know, that flexibility and feeling like they can play what they want to play. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it was perfect. When you're designing a game, trying to figure out what feels good, because you have different playtesters, I'm sure. Some might be heavier gamers who are like, oh, I'm getting everything. Like, I have too much to look at or whatever. And then there's the other players who are like, oh my God, this is so nice. Like, I have options. They feel like they can make a few dumb mistakes and still be able to compete, which in heavier games can be a little bit harder. And I don't know, like, where you think this falls on, like, do you think it's like as heavy as Wingspan or more or less?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. It's funny because some people say it's easier than Wingspan. Other people say it's more complex than Wingspan. So I think it's easier to learn, but I think there are aspects that make it more complex. Like there's, you know, having to also balance resources to feed the babies. The fact that there are all these achievements that players can kind of race for all at the same time. I do think it is slightly weighted higher than Wingspan. But yeah, some people think it's way easier, and other people, some of my early playtesters were like, this is much more complex than Wingspan. So I think you can choose how complex you want to play it. You can kind of create your own journey. I have a friend who didn't play very many board games and, you know, isn't the most advanced player, but it's so fun to watch her. She just collects resources, plays the cards that are cute and pretty, and like has the best time. I'm glad that players with that mindset can also enjoy the game. And I feel like there's still some meat there for the heavier gamers to find some strategy. And I do want to design an expansion at some point, which adds even more complexity and more things to think about and player interaction. I think that's so fun and a little harder to do with Tableau builders. So yeah, that's kind of next on my plate.
And is it going to be your April Fool's Day joke? Buy them in space.
Buy them in space. Galactic expansion. Probably not this time around, but because that April Fool's joke went well and almost viral, like, people were like, this would be so fun and unique. Like, you don't get these types of nature games out in space. But I was thinking of, like, you know, Apiary and a few other games. I was like, this isn't as uncommon as you might think. But I think the next expansion that I really want to do will be, like, adding the coastal habitat. Something with sea otters and kelp and starfish. And yeah, I was already thinking, like, what is the next cool wooden component that I can add? As I'm sure you could tell from when you played Biome, like, I'm super into the wooden pieces.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was like a fancy game because I'm like, there's these little nests. Like, it's actually made like a little nest. Like, someone took these little twigs and like weaved them up together. And there's like little chicks. And I was like, I was so confused. I was like, wait, what? This game comes with this?
It does, yeah.
It's like you went to a craft place, like a Michael's, and you're like, I'm going to make this. I'm in my game for funsies to make it special for just me, but it's for everyone.
You know, I had nests, little like straw nests or for my first playtest already that I had ordered off of Etsy. I just, you know, knew that these had to be in the game. My mom has been coming to some board game conventions with me, and she always talks about like some of her favorite parts of the convention is like teaching people how to play Biome. And when she gets these like bigger, buff, like bearded men who are like ooing and awing and putting the tiny chicks in the nests, she's like, this is the best thing ever. That's also been really fun, is like how Biome has brought my family together to like travel to conventions. And my sister did end up doing a ton of work on the art and graphic design after my Kickstarter. So yeah, really fun project.
Oh, that's so cool that you got your family involved. My family tends to be playtesters on a lot of my lighter games, but maybe my sister is the only one I could see playing this, but that's just because she's super into nature themed games, like her and her boyfriend. Her boyfriend actually works training bears and otters at Bearzona.
You're kidding.
I am not. Oh, and my she goodness. Takes photos of like wildlife. So it's like the two of them are very much nature lovers, especially when it comes to animals. So
wow. You said bears and otters?
Yeah, yeah. I'll send you a picture after this.
Please do.
He'll like make the bear like stick their tongues out or like do little tricks and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Oh my goodness. Biome does have a bear in it. We've got the black bear in the game. And my next expansion I want to do with otters. And actually, I've got a 2025 convention exclusive promo card. So for any listeners out there who have Biome, come find me at a convention and I'll have little Northern River Otter cards to hand out. So excited about that.
That's super cute. So yeah, what made you decide to actually make this? Like, this is going to be my full-time thing and I'm going to do a Kickstarter and I'm going to start a company. Like, walk me through that.
After that first playtest, I was really like, wow, this has been so fun to make this prototype. I want to keep playtesting. And, you know, it was clear from that first playtest, even though it was 3 hours and miserable at times, like there was still something there. And, you know, everyone really encouraged me. They're like, you should really keep working on this. I see potential. And yeah, so over time, like I kept unlocking steps in the game design journey, like figuring out, okay, players should already have a starting bird and tree, you know, from the get-go. So you already have more actions to choose from early on in the game. Everyone's guaranteed to have nests and babies. As these pieces came together, I was like, okay, you know, this is really happening. And then, okay, what should I do? Should I self-publish? Should I find a publisher? And, you know, as you know, game designers, you know, get 5% or less.
Hey, it's not great.
Yeah, really not great. And I was shocked and horrified when I heard that. You know, now, so that I was like, okay, I'll try and self-publish. And then it became clear that Kickstarter is the best route. So when I knew, okay, I'm going to do Kickstarter, it's like, okay, I've been putting a lot of time and money into this. I should start a company, you know, so I can start to write things off. And
yeah, smart.
In January of 2023, Linus Games came to fruition. And yeah, and then a year later, I did the Kickstarter, February 2024. And then I could finally justify this career when the Kickstarter did really well. So I'm, yeah, super, super grateful to all these things that came together to make Biome possible.
That is amazing. And how long in total did it take from that initial super long playtest to the game actually coming out where people could play it?
Yeah, so October 2022 is when I started designing, and then I fulfilled games to my backers last November. And I would say the game design itself like finished probably a month after the Kickstarter ended. I was like, okay, it's done. No more tweaking. It's great. So yeah, a year and a half for the design, and then almost 2 years from when I started to like getting the games in people's hands, which is pretty, what I've heard, very, very fast. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, but really, really fun.
Yeah, I feel like timelines, it tends to be like 2 to 3 years on average is what I tell people when they ask me, but it's a little different when you're the one making it and it's your first game and it is a heavier game because there's a lot more logistics. Like, how do you price this out? Especially when you're someone who needs little nests in it. Like, how did you find a manufacturing partner? How did you decide like what to price your game at for Kickstarter? And what was like it being really good mean? Like how many copies did you do in your first printing?
So finding a manufacturer, I go to conventions. So that would be definitely my advice for new folks in the industry. Or every time I go, I'm like, okay, this was worth my money and then some, my time and energy going to conventions, just meeting people. So I got to meet a bunch of manufacturers, and I showed them, you know, my little nests on Etsy and was like, what can you come up with? You know, some people said, oh no, we can't do this. And then others said, oh yeah, I think we can do this. And so I got quotes from a bunch of different manufacturers, and I ended up choosing Longpack Games, who also produced Everdell. So, you know, once I heard that Longpack made Everdell, I was like, oh, okay, Everdell's one of my favorite games, and I love the components. So it's like, okay, this could really work. And then, yeah, they offered me, considering the number of components and the quality of components, and I went with FSC Materials, like, definitely gave me the most competitive price. And pricing has been on my mind a lot lately with, you know, the hot topic of the tariffs situation.
Which I'm hoping by the time this airs has not actually happened. Oh my goodness. To the level in which they're saying. But right. Yeah. For anyone listening, we're recording this in early April.
Early April. There's threats of increasing it yet again. So we'll see how this pans out. But I was hoping to do like an even more affordable retail edition. And now with the tariffs, that's not looking possible, because I can see why now. Game designers often don't get the highest percentages, because even as a publisher, I'm losing big margins to distributors and consolidators. So it's just, everyone gets a big cut. Back to your question of manufacturers and pricing. Got the quotes from different manufacturers, signed with Longpack, was like, okay, these are, you know, the standard multiplier of, you know, 5 to 7x. And I did want to offer my Kickstarter backers like a good discount to incentivize people to back the project. So that worked really well. I had like an early bird price of $50 on the Kickstarter with an MSRP of 70. And I had like the deluxe, I think, for 69. And the MSRP for that is 89. And then I had like this Kickstarter exclusive Fox Meeple. So that won't be included in any future print runs. It all worked out.
Okay, and this I'm going to ask just because when I asked you in person, how many was your first print run? Because I was incredibly impressed.
My first print run was just shy of 12,000 copies.
See, and I thought for like a first time and for it being successful in a heavier game, that's impressive, honestly.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. A friend of mine had selected like the local pickup option from the Kickstarter. And she came up to me and she's like, so how many copies did you sell? Like 200 or 400? And I was like, over 10,000. And she's like, what? She like lost her mind.
That's awesome. So my first thing, I tried to do a Kickstarter when I first started designing, but I made a game that shouldn't be on Kickstarter. And I'm glad I ended it, because I could have barely made it fund and then had to do all the work and realize that I don't want to be a publisher. So very awesome, because mine would have been like, oh, I'm going to make 500 copies. So that would have been a little closer.
Right. With, you know, a lot of manufacturers have these minimums of like 1,000, 1,500 copies. So probably the right move. I know. I feel like only after the Kickstarter did the real work really begin, like getting those files ready for production, then fulfillment and shipping and freight and logistics. Oh my goodness. That's like the last thing you want to do when you're just a game designer turned publisher.
Oh, for sure. And how did you get your sister involved in doing some of that work?
Yeah, I had a graphic designer who I was introduced to through a friend who's based out of Poland, Grzegorz. Super amazing. And he was going on vacation for a month, as they do in Europe. He was like, I'm going to be gone. And this was May, right after my Kickstarter. And I knew there were still some things I wanted to work on, like the rule book had yet to be finalized and things like that. So I was like, hey, Josie, I could use your help. And somehow I convinced her to sign on. I think I bribed her with lots of free coffee and lunch. And yeah, luckily she gave me a very generous, you know, family and friends rate. Thank God, because we worked together for 2 months, pretty much every day, the whole day. Yeah. Because I produce games in English, German, and French, and my game has over 200 cards and then a 16-page rulebook. And so getting all the files together and the translations together for those three languages, that I was underwater. So thank God for Josie. We got through it together. You know, adding French kind of at the last minute definitely was the cause, part of the reason that things got delayed with production, besides climate change and the nests not drying properly for production. Anyways, that was, we toughed it out together, and I'm so glad to have had her work on Biome, and now she's finishing up the art for my next game, Faken, which is launching probably in the next month or two on Kickstarter. So yeah, it's, she's fully involved now and coming to cons with me, and yeah, you've met her, which is awesome. Very, very grateful for her.
It's great that you had a sibling that had the talent that you needed at the time, that was willing to do it. That's perfect. It's like the universe needed it to happen.
100%. So many things work together. Thank God she's such a talented artist and graphic designer and perfectionist in many ways. So that was, yeah, exactly the skills I needed to make it happen. I have no idea with bleed and margins and all these things, you know, don't ask me. Very, very lucky.
Yeah, you can't do everything as much as you'd like to try, I'm sure. And wait, do you speak French too? I knew you spoke German.
So I took some French in high school and college, but I don't really speak it fluently. So I ended up finding a local localization partner, Entrefin. They've done Spirit Island and a few other games, I think, in French. So yeah, they hired a professional translator. He translated everything into French.
That's amazing. And so now that the game's published, how do you think it's doing with people?
Yeah, I think well. Like, I think one thing I regret or wish I could change is the title font of the cards. Because of all these like effects, these 3D effects were put on the cards, and then when a graphic designer on my team, I will not name them, one out of two, made all the font a little smaller to fit better on the cards, they didn't notice that it kind of created this blurry effect on the title card, just because of, by shrinking it down. For most people, it doesn't really bother them. But for folks who, you know, have not the best vision, or it does come across as a tiny bit blurry. And so that was so frustrating when I discovered that, because, you know, that was, I had done all these rounds of prototypes and sample copies before where it wasn't an issue, and then just slightly scaled down, it became a problem. So yeah, that was like one thing that was a bummer. Other than that, the feedback has been really positive. Like, people have said, you know, there's a few typos here and there, but that's all fixed for my next reprint, my revised edition. And yeah, overall, people say they really enjoy the game. So that's really all you can hope for your first game, I think.
Oh, totally. From the journey, do you have like a favorite experience? Because I'm guessing that little note was your least favorite.
Right. Yes, exactly. Figuring out, oh no, this didn't come out the way I wanted to, and now there's 12,000 copies out there with this problem. Yeah, not the best experience, but ooh, favorite experiences, probably having a booth at Essen Spiel and getting to demo the games. So I had a booth there at 2023 and 2024 where I was just like demoing my prototypes essentially without copies to sell. And people came back the following year to my booth, and the game was so much improved in 2024. And it was like the final sample copy. I was about, the next month is when I started Kickstarter fulfillment. And yeah, people coming back the next year to play by them again, and like also place pre-orders, and just seeing their excitement, I was like, wow, like I've really built something special here. So I think just seeing people play it real time and their excitement for the game, and they're like, I want to support you and buy them, like, it's, yeah, super, super rewarding. So yeah, that, and then also having the chance to work on this with my sister and really bonding over the game artwork and design, it's been super special.
Yeah, it was cool seeing your family showing it off at a Spiel last year.
Oh yeah, right. You came by the booth.
I did.
Yes. Oh, I know. Sadly, my parents can't make it to Spiel this year, but hopefully for 2026, I can wrangle them to come again.
Free workers.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. I know you've mentioned a little bit of advice more on the manufacturing side, but do you have any for like someone who is designing their first game possibly?
I would say, so one, again, conventions, showing up in person. You'll just meet so many people in the industry who will help you and inspire you. Yeah, just make, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm not alone in this. Like, we're all kind of figuring this out, and everyone in the industry is there to help each other out. And then my other piece of advice is to really build something that you love and are passionate about. Because since Biome has become so successful, other creators have reached out to me to publish their games, which is super cool and exciting. And like, I've realized, like, I have ideas of more games that I want to design, but I'm actually really enjoying now, like, kind of coming on as a game developer and finalizing the design of other folks' games and then publishing them. But I'm being super selective about which games I take on, essentially. Like, I really feel like I need to be super passionate and really love the theme and the gameplay to take it on, because so many people told me, I can totally see why this is successful. And like, I really like this game because, Leonie, I can tell how much you love the game. And they've told me, like, if you didn't love the game so much, it would not be this successful. And that really struck with me. I was like, yeah, like, I love nature. I love animals so much. So I think that really shines through in the game. So that would be my advice. Like, if you're building a game, maybe choose a theme or, yeah, mechanics that you're super passionate about, and other people will see your passion and excitement for the game, and that'll take you places.
I completely agree, because like, you're going to be its biggest advocate, as like, if you're self-publishing or if you're pitching to other publishers, you can tell when someone is invested in their game, and like, past it printing, they're going to continue to advertise and market it and stuff. And especially for you as a smaller company, having someone as enthusiastic as you is just going to like fuel you and want to like help develop and want to get that product out and just like hopefully bring that person to conventions or whatever to see their baby fall into other people's hands. It's just such a fun experience, and like that adrenaline rush you get from it.
So true. Yeah, I can totally see that now from your perspective as well. Like, for Wise Wizard, like, choosing games to take on, can you see the creator also, you know, being a marketing force for you? Because yeah, it makes such a difference.
I love the fact that you ended up with Faken, since that was one of the games that I wanted for this. That was so funny when you're like, oh yeah, my new game, Faken. I was like, excuse me, wait, you're the other publisher that I lost it to. Oh, okay.
So good. I'm just lucky that I live near Wrath, the creator, and could play it a lot with him in person, and he could see my love and excitement for the game. I think that's the only reason that I won out.
It's totally fine. I liked what I saw when I recently played it, and this episode airs in like June, so I don't know, maybe you'll have like late backing or something by then. But yeah, people like this. Yeah, you should talk about the game quick.
Sure. So Faken is a social deduction game where everyone can lie, but no one has to. I like to describe it as a simple but elegant social deduction game. So players essentially is in the name, Faken. You are fey and of either the summer or winter court. And you are trying to identify among the other players who is the heir of your court and who is the heir of the opponent's court. And you want to crown your heir and dagger the opponent's heir to win the game. So information becomes public really fast, which I like, and gameplay just moves really fast. So you can play like multiple games within half an hour or 45 minutes, no problem. And it's possible that all players are even on the same team, in which case you win or lose together.
So be careful who you dagger.
Yes, exactly. Be very careful who you dagger. So I'm really excited by this one. Like, my sister has been working super hard on the art for Faken, and it's just going to be gorgeous. And pretty much everyone that I've shown it to, even the non-gamers, they're really into it. So I'm super excited. That'll, yeah, be on Kickstarter May, June-ish.
Okay, so it might actually be gone by the time this airs. Perfect. Well, for my last question, unrelated to Biome and everything we've already talked about, if you could have designed any game that you weren't the designer of, what game would you have chosen?
Oh my goodness. I feel like Wingspan is almost like the obvious answer. But yeah, either Wingspan or Everdell, just because I love Everdell so much. Like, also amazing components, worker placement, a little engine building, tableau building action. Just like gorgeous art, adorable theme. And then if it was a party game, I would have to say Caution Signs, because that is hilarious and great components as well, and also moves fast and involves art. So it's a great game.
Well, that's the first that's ever happened. No one's ever chosen one of my games, but yeah. I'll take it. Number three. Woohoo!
It's worthy. It's worthy. It's like everyone I've taught it to loves it. It's like, I'm going to buy a copy. So fingers crossed you get some awards for that game this year.
Hopefully by the time this airs, maybe I'll be coming close to that one at Origins.
Oh, but, yeah.
Regardless, hey, I'm happy to be nominated, and I'm so happy that the game is continuing to succeed and that we're going to be printing it in other languages. So thank you again for looking at the German version to make sure we didn't mess that up.
That's on my to-do list to do this week. I will definitely check it out. I think it's going to do really well in Germany too.
So pumped. Well, thank you to everyone who's been listening to both of us talk. This was Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration of Publication, episode 116, Biome. And Leonie, for anyone who's going to try to follow you personally or your games, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok. I think Linus Games. I think Instagram is linus.games. And then you can also find me on Instagram at biomeboardgame and biomethegame.com.
And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. You can find me on social media under Instagram, X Blue Sky under the name Token Gamer, and that's JYMER. Also, I have a website, DMAR Creative Group. Thank you so much for being on the show, and it was fun chatting and letting people learn how Biome works, even though it is still sad that the snakes eat the
bees. Oh, yeah. One day you should just take all the snakes out of your game.
That's the only way this game will be owned by me, is if I throw away them all. Yeah. But I've played other games where my friends will house rule removing snakes, and then it like kind of breaks the game a little bit. And they lose like a whole chunk.
That's oh so man, funny.
Yeah.
You can ditch them.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Danielle. Such a pleasure.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.